The charge of memory, okay? And it's called Our Neighbor Dinah. She came every morning to bring the milk jug, its yellow spout gaping like a duck's beak. I stood with my grandmother at the door, listening to the gate creak and the click-clack of her lace-up boots. Later on, the milkman came, egg yolk stuck to his stomach. He filled the jug up to the brim. I was always a little afraid of him. I held out my red pan. He filled mine too. I counted the bubbles. She called every evening on her way home, digging deep into the pocket of her long skirt. She took out two bull dyes, one for me and one for my brother. As she crossed the road to her own house, I heard her coming. On frosty mornings, I watched my father spread ashes from the dirty turf along the path. No danger now that she or the milkman would slip on the icy ground. She came every Friday looking tired and worn, taking money from her velvet purse, paying my grandmother for the milk, for me and my brother the shiny penny. Long hours sewing heavy canvas straw bags, steel needles, fingertips raw, flower dust choked her life away. They were no protective masks, I said. When she was dying, I spent many days at her bedside. The crimson quilt, the colour of her rose leaves. I wet her lips with cold water. I wiped her brow. I sang lines from the song she loved. No long lovely river flowed gently along. I read a passage from her favorite book, Alice in Wonderland. She couldn't speak. An occasional smile, a grip of my hand told me she was listening. My mother made me leave before the end. I didn't want to go. She said I was too young to watch someone take their last breath. It's not very nice to see. Say a prayer now and kiss her goodbye. Black car, rusty wrought iron gate, broken headstone, please.
Thanks very much, Mary. Next up we have Peter Lucy.
Hi, this is a short story written by Martin Innes, and the light humor story, was reading part of it, called Career Move. It's set in the world where poets are in big demand and pay lots of money, and screenplay writers, on the other hand, submit their work to obscure screenplay journals for publication. The story goes back and forth between Luke, who's a famous poet, and Alistair, who is a screenplay writer. The story begins with Alistair submitting a screenplay to a screenplay magazine editor. He had been mentioned before, but unsuccessfully, so I'm not sure if it was published. And then we meet Luke. When we meet him, he's just written a poem. So, for Luke, it's much easier to get published because the poems in this world, they're very popular, as I said. One other thing, he, being very popular and stuff, he also faces intervention from his publishers who want to make sure it makes lots of money, that sort of thing. And he faces intervention from an increasing number of people. There's the story. When Luke finished the new poem, entitled simply Thomas, he xeroxed the printout and passed it to his agent. 90 minutes later, he turned from the gym downstairs and prepared special fruit juice while the answering machine told him, among many other things, to get back to Mike. Reaching for an extra lime, Luke touched the reflex for Talent International. Ah, Luke, said Mike. It's moving. We've already had a response. Yeah, how come? It's 4 a.m. where he is. No, said Mike. It's 8 a.m. where he is. He's in Australia, developing a poem with Peter Barry. Luke didn't want to hear about Peter Barry. He bent and tugged off his tank top. Walls and windows maintained a respectful distance. The room was a broad beam of sun haze and river light. Luke sipped his juice. His extreme astringency caused him to lift both elbows and give a single embittered nod. He said, what did he think? Joe said, Mike, he did backflip. It tells you, I'm blown away by the new poem. I just know the sun is really going to happen. Luke took this coolly. He wasn't at all old, but he had been in poetry long enough to take these things coolly. He turned. Tippy, who had been shopping, was now letting herself into the apartment, not without difficulty. She was indeed cruelly encumbered. Luke said, you haven't talked numbers yet. I mean like a ballpark figure. Mike said, we understand each other. Joe knows about Mona's interest and him at TCC. Good, said Luke. Suki was wandering friendly towards him, shedding various purchases as she approached, creels and caskets, shining satchels. So I want you to go out there at least twice, said Mike, initially to discuss. They can't get over it that you don't live there. We could tell that Suki had spent much more than she intended. He could tell by the quality of patience in her sigh as she began to lick the sweat on his shoulder blade. He said, come on, Mike, they know I hate all that LA crap. How long have you been here, Rita? Alright, I'll leave it there and might read more.
Muslim women have to wear burqas, or well, some of them choose to wear burqas and hijabs and all this. And this little thing was really about that idea that, you know, that they're completely covered. So it's called Powerless. Ebony sheath folds down all your curves, conceals the body in a swirl of black. You see fragmented images rising in the heat, the prophet's message burning in the sand, the pall of smoke that wrecked the morning sky pulls down your eyes, deepens your distrust.
Thank you. I know to expect another letter from Maisie Gonal. I knew she's a teacher in an inner city school, and it's rough going, and she resorts to sending letters every day to the principal. And the name of the school is St. Agnes. Dear Principal, I'm here now with 6M. All is well. The pupils have covered the blackboard with some kind of varnish, which means it can no longer be written on. What will they think of next? They really are so inventive. It's always such a pleasure to come into 6M. M doesn't stand for marvelous, in case you didn't know, Principal. It stands for metalwork. Since no work is possible now, I am having a discussion with them about their latest metalwork project. Jim Owens thinks he can make a bomb. The others don't seem to think he can. but he spent the first 10 minutes of the class explaining how, by combining his knowledge of physics and metalwork, he reckons the whole west wing of the school would be history after his project. He sounded very convincing, I must say. Then Oran spoke up and said that he had a plan for laying the teacher's driveway with mines. I asked him how he would go about that, and it was so interesting to listen to an inventive young mind expounding his theories so earnestly. He really was a mine of information, if you can excuse the pun. He said that there are so many potholes in the tarmac out of the driveway that placing mines there and covering them up would be, and I quote, easy peasy. Stephen Ryan then is more domesticated. He said that he was planning to make iron underwear, which would obviate the need for washing or ironing. Other revolutionary ideas included metal windows, unbreakable presumably, mesh tights, and steel boots. We are certainly dealing with heavy metal men here, Principal, but all I can say in conclusion to this present letter is that if you don't relish the thought of hiring minesweepers to the driveway or contacting the bomb disposal squad, I think you should keep 6M under very close observation indeed. Knowing you are allergic to pupils and classrooms, however, and would only be further traumatized by any close contact with pupils, could I suggest that you could perhaps man some position in the mountains and with a pair of high-carb binoculars keep the pupils under observation from afar? And that would ensure you would, in the event of explosion, survive, not to mention your wig. Oh, by the way, any sign of growth under that orangutan skin? Anyway, yours nervously, Maeve. Tick, 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 tick. P.S. Hadn't time to fill you in more fully on the tick, tick, parent-teacher meeting in the current letter. We'll get onto that tick in the next one. Tick, tick, if there is a next one. I'm heading for 2W now. God help me. I may be some time.
If you don't know, Pooty are those little cherub-like figures. So, on style fresco, as Pooty pits in the fountain of the courtyard of the cafe, I'm feeling so miserably precious. A reformed drunkard blushing over his gourd of yerba mate. Amongst these boho bozos with their politicized diets and onks al fresco, several on Dimanche Baptist families and a conda nasty couple making the last of their many goes of it. Will I ever be able to rise above the primal? Could I kick his ass? Would I kick this chick out of bed level? Will I never master the mystic trick of taking self-loathing and idle loafing and making of them love Eucharistic loaf? As Pooty pissed in the fountain of the courtyard of the croissant door, and dragon and damsel flies do their darndest to gather and darn together this piss-poor lower kingdom's randomness. This is about a girl in Canada. Toronto summertime and Jenny caught in the tie. For now, anyhow, her life's a herky-jerky pre-Kitty Hawk flying machine is propelled, I mean, precariously by bags of baby carrots, her psychotomimetic CD collection and non-blinking Christmas lights on the freaking ficus tree. For today, anyway, Jenny Cotton surrounds herself with attention deficit debutante and is always ready as Jenny to squat in the alley just to piss on your fancy epiphany. For now, anyhow, she dreams of a Chateau Marmont room of her own to read Che Guevara in the jacuzzi in. This Cotton prefers chilled vodka to gin, and would rather be an elegant pedestrian than drive some shitbox. Jenny brings out the rapists and drug counselors and therapists, and when her dog chases his tail, Cotton's convinced he's an alchemist. Oh, Jenny, tough and natural, soft and practical as Cotton. Does she contradict herself? Who gives a fuck? Jenny Cotton contradicts herself. Just a short one. White Goddess poem number 3 for JGD. In order to realize it's futile to resist her, I need only look raptly into her eyes, and there I am, trapped and tiny, truly her pupil. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Next up we have On Top of Erica.
By the way, if you want to get into the terms, you just call me horse. Now, I'm going to give you copies of this because I tell you an interesting story by the time distributing the copies, and you'll see the point as I'm reading for you by being very helpful with the copies. So I pass a bundle down that side, and I pass another bundle around that side, and take one or two or three among each group, if you like. This was a poem that, out of pure fun, I put together one evening at a kind of a storming session after we had been on a creative writing course. And it materialized, it was very funny, because there was about 8 of us having a quiet drink. And I just wrote this, I said, I'm going to put something together before we kind of just kind of start to crack over a couple of pints. And the funny thing was that it's quite phonetic, as you can see. And just to add a bit of whatever to it, I said among the group, I said, whoever can read this in the best and the most appropriate accent, I have brought it on the bottle of whatever it was, wine or something. So it was unbelievable. Everybody had a whack on it. And the girl who read it best was, would you believe it? From downtown New York City. Sorry, I laughed at you there with her lovely American accent a while ago. No, no, I'm going to try and read it as I think it should be read, but of course it's all, as you know, it's phonetic. I also found out at the end of the evening that I think this girl from New York had read Finnegan's Wake and a certain part of Bloom's Day in Jim Joyce's Ulysses. That's another good work. Anyway, Clappers, the Cork Rappers, a.k.a. The Room Was a Mess. Now, they say that Eminem was the
proponent, or is the proponent of rep, not a word of this company, or the staff of the Nazi. And this is actually pulling us outside, because, you know, this is still walking on the street, not the south.
How's it going by? Not so bad, by. We're walking by. Trying to sit by. Have an accident, by. That's why it wasn't, by. What really happened, by? I was looking for you, by. Oh, by. What do you think, by? You're a footballer, remember? Strong and broad, by. Come on, tell us, by. Yeah, that's a course, by. You're so safe, boy. Stay at home, boy. Oh, it's a little song, boy.
I used to find out
that getting straight, my boy.
Getting straight, my boy.
Gotta be in the Mahogas.
Did you ever shout, boy? You're not too much, boy. So what's wrong, boy?
Look, you was in your rights, boy.
Oh, bad time to work, boy. What's the reason, boy? Will I be asking, boy? Just be a time, boy. So come on, tell us, boy. Really pathetic, boy. So what's the negative, Christy, boy? What happened to you, boy? Why don't you train me, boy? Said the room was a mess, boy. Any of you in the room, you know about, boy?
Thanks very much. Next up we have Patricia White. I'm trying to say can everyone just in it to 1 point just to write it short and then. I think this is probably called the music. Unfortunately, I'm not that tall. Can you hear me in the back?
Yeah.
Alright. This is crucifixion made easy. It's too early, of course, but from the last note, against what fates differ, and the appointed say, it's too early, of course, to fight the last gasp. Whenever the public darkens at twilight on the last denizens, who are releasing credibility? The song that's still dear, no bread to go around, being fast-forwarded to a brutal morning of incredulity over breakfast. Questions unnecessarily, played by intrusion, into the public eyeball to eyeball in trying to undo the world. What I would give for a skillful conversation to terminate conscience instead of flight and fancy, getting into the columns in professional faith. Thank you.
Very good, thanks Patricia. Next up we have Patty Doyle.
And maybe someday, when the weather takes a turn for the worse, we seek to seek shelter somewhere, beneath a tree or a rock or a prayer, or an old tale taught to children to send them to sleep. And maybe someday these old tales will wake us up again, and in the words of an old song that your grandmother sang, we'll find a door to a world that is forever new and forever young. And maybe then we remember to sing, and our singing might carry us home. And maybe then the earth will be our garden again, and we won't feel so lost and alone. And our motorways will become folktales, signposted with symbols and motifs. And our toll bridges become troll bridges, leading us into the deep, to where in our shared subconscious we might find the wisdom of old, that beauty is a song well sung, and truth is a tale well told.
Thank you.
Next up we have Ed as well.
Hands up who's been through a painful breakup. Everybody put your hands up, come on. You know, yeah. Anyway. If you have, you might understand where this phone comes from. This old pain really ain't so painful these days. Though back when it started, I'd have sworn it would tear me apart. And I guess that's just another of life's funny ways. Perhaps time really is a healer of all wounds, offer of faith. But these are times I reckon I could make a brand new start. This old pain really ain't so painful these days. As it seems, the end of the world was, after all, just a phase. Same way sometimes what seems a big shit turns out to be just a fart. Then I guess that's just another of life's funny ways. Lately, my mind doesn't spend quite so much time trotting out the whole malaise. And lately, ain't so much hurt romancing anger in my heart. This old pain really ain't so painful these days, and so maybe peace can be bought with torment, clarity with haze. All that remains of anguish is a fraction now, a tiny part, but then I guess that's just another of life's funny ways, and for that little remaining bit, I hope it stays. The keepsake of a feeling I perfected to a fine art. This soul pain really ain't so painful these days. But then I guess that's just another of life's funny ways.
Dunlear. He studied the sky at Dunlear, proclaimed its abundant clear. My telescope shows it's plain as your crows, this new moon seems part of the sphere. Retreat. No weekend case, or steerage trunk, no small finesse, or Chinese junk, in search of grace, to beat blue funk, or sin the face, no longer drunk, no his embrace, on hallowed chunk, behold his face, or mermaid's dunk, a sense of place, unknown to flunk, before my space, or blogger's gunk, the anger's trace, no grass or skunk, at last, one place, within, kerplunk, no double bass, hard rock or punk, in uppercase, temptation sunk, but time to pace, pursuit the hunk, that scanty space, in robes, pre-shrunk, from peak to base, no front door clunk, those steps retrace, those counters sunk, that night, your place, now who'd have thunk? At waypoint late, where mid the bunk, he played his ace, poor skeleton monk.
And next up we have two cards three.
This poem, this is my fascination with Marcel Duchamp, the French-American artist, and he created this large glass, which is divided into parts, and there was a contraction of some sort at the top and a contraction at the bottom, and he was, he saw the a human soul in the machine, working for the machine. So it's Bride Stripped Bare by Her Bachelor's Even, 1923. I'll pass it on to some short bits. The hidden mechanics of fortune, of sex, wheels that turn love, a vortex. Her, shallow ambiguous face, to real coherence, strength. His, grand material body image, angles that find no rest, depth. Between them, a horizon, a wall or a floor, inject, essence of bachelor gloom, into unraveling bride, her layers alluringly shed. If eyes an illusion, or is it alienation and monochrome, who is subsection flesh, all shreds? His desire, a corrosive power that seeks to bride brittle shells, reducing sex to a game, like chess, precise, or a device of glistening through, within gyrating tropics of grind, love to a powder, a pulp. For there is no noble reality ever for the bride or for her relentless special machine that strips her bare to the naked bone of his transfixed desire. Is life in the end a machine or reject?
And next up we have Lucy Regan.
And this is called Fragility Preserved. Walking home to my breast, a scented posy in my pocket, a red rose in perfect bloom, lavender, sprigs of rosemary for cooking, and tiny white floral clusters whose name I've yet to know, but whose perfume grow butterflies and bees. These will tell another story of petals painting for you their muted hues of beauty, preserving in paper thin filaments of fragile decay, imprints of that delicate breath, reborn on a page with love for you. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Walter. That was lovely. Next up, last but not least, is Christy Parker.
I don't know, I might have read this poem before, I can't remember. I have a vague recollection of writing it up yet. But in any case, I'm going to read it tonight. I might forget to read it next week. Already. In the history of time, every nation and every era has had its synagogues and its bureaucrats. And basically, put this way, the KGB in Russia, East Germany has it, Nazi, Britain had it. Margaret Thatcher. We have the Tidy Towns Committee. These people are okay, they're on the street obsessed. It doesn't matter if you murder somebody in the street. Okay, it's a bit bad, but for Christ's sake, don't leave blood on the paper this morning. Somebody might see it. This is about a man who is obsessed with King Street, and it's probably one in every town, because there's a Tidy Towns Committee in every town now, there's not even three or four of them at this stage. And there's one man who always rises to the challenge about the rest of them. He's here and there, he's everywhere, he's well past half demented. I've seen him in all kinds of moods, but never yet contented. He stalks me in the street and pubs to vent his indignation in ever-grabbing, chest-stabbing, demonic demonstration. He fills his gripe with tiresome tripe at some fundamental purist, clenching fists as he insists he must attract more tourists. But his obsession brings depression and far less ups and downs. For the frenzied plan of this frantic man is to win the Tidy Towns. That worried look I once mistook for wisdom of some kind was put in place on his sad face by what dogs leave behind. I've heard him say in a serious way that he will not be happy until every mud with a careless butt is obliged to wear a nappy. I mean, look at him, Gennady, for Christ's sake. In dry clean clothes, he sticks his nose into every conversation to insist you care for the ozone layer, cut grass and conservation. As he talks for hours of hanging flowers to make the streets more scenic, so some yank off a bus will think of us as fragrant and hygienic. He lives his life in endless strife of hurt and being offended by cans and bottles, broken chairs and wheelie bins upended. Abandoned fridges next to bridges, cars that have been stripped, living rats and lifeless cats and mattresses half ripped. Of shoes and trees and old TVs and rusty pots and pans, hats lacking heads and broken beds and half a million cans.
Kings of brass and broken glass, for passed on banks for light. Roadstone cones, mobile phones, and a week from someone's wife. We're all to blame in mortal shame as he pints along the ground, under duress from the sordid mess that he sees lying around. There, he swings like a pig on wheels. Look at the evil god! As he waves his hand, you're left to stand and roll your eyes and nod. His face turns puce at bit abuse, and his words fall out in stutters as he grabs a look at the colourful puke that infiltrates the gutters. Where the chewing gum has used condom, the collective off-tight ends, and the racing dockets from empty pockets that litter without blend. This serious bloke might chance a joke, but of course, it'll be clean. He agrees we should hug trees and anything else that's green. I know the cure for this boring whore by way of a solution. The message implies that his tongue should be tied and combat noise pollution. Thank you.